The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome to the Mr. Constitution Hour with Douglas V. Gibbs, a broadcast that examines our ever-changing world through the lens of the United States Constitution. Douglas V. Gibbs is on the air.
Hello, my friends. Douglas V. Gibbs, Mr. Constitution here. It's great to be with you. Glad to be back. I missed last week, but we are back in the saddle again, and we got a lot to talk about, so let's bring it up. So here's what we're going to go over today. So we've got a statement by the Biden administration. They're going to hunt down all January 6 accomplices. I know like two dozen of the people were there, and I talk about it endlessly. Does that put me on that list? I've got a worried wife saying, Doug, stop talking about it. I don't want you to wind up in jail. That's what they're trying to accomplish. That's what tyrannies do. Second, the money to Ukraine. Everyone gets a piece. Presidential immunity, we're going to look at the constitutional angle on that. What does the Constitution say? Is Trump correct? Does he have presidential immunity regarding all of these 91 charges that are against him? It's got the weaponization of the legal system against President Trump by the left in full swing right now. The Supreme Court of the United States, Texas border ruling, and Texas response, we will continue to deploy the razor wire. What is the constitutional say about that? What are the authorities? Did the court have the authority to decide what they did? Was it correct? Was it not correct? What is Texas? What is their constitutional response that they can put out there? What is the definition of insurrection, and does it apply to Trump? The Iowa and New Hampshire caucus and primary. Arizona GOP bribe offer to carry late. Then we have the constitutional lesson today, if we get to it. And I'm wondering now, Article 1, Section 3, we're going to talk about the United States Senate. The United States Senate was designed to be oversight by the state over the federal government. That was the purpose of the way that the Senate was designed, or part of the purpose. So we're going to get into that a little bit. And then we have a history lesson, getting back to the book, A Promise of Truth Self-Evident, which I've written. It'll be on the market in the next couple of weeks. It's a U.S. history book. This is part one, early American history, that I'll have published. But what we're going through is actually part three. I've written the whole book. It's just a matter of getting the different parts out. Part three, and we are at the Korean War in our lessons in history. So that's what we got on the Barbie today for the program. So welcome to the show. Welcome to broadcast Mr. Constitution Hour. I am Mr. Constitution Douglas V. Gibbs. You can find me at DouglasVGibbs.com. Your gifts, your sponsorships, everything is what keeps all of this on the air. My KMET contract is getting ready to expire. I've got like $4,000 I've got to raise. The contract for this one, the contract's designed a little bit different for KPRZ, but once again, there's always money needed to help fund it. And so both programs, for the most part, are on the air because of the listeners. I do have one advertiser on the other program at KMET. I don't have any advertisers on this show. The only reason this is on the air at all is because of you. So DouglasVGibbs.com, and you can become a patron. Go to where it's on the link bar where there's a star and it says join. Hit that and join as a patron. $9 a month, $9 a month. Right now, all that does is help fund what I do. But down the road, we are going to be offering exclusive stuff for our patrons down the road. And then if you want to donate otherwise, the way to do it is you can, I believe right there at DouglasVGibbs.com, there's other ways also. But let me give it to you here on the air. PayPal.com. I know a lot of people don't like PayPal, but right now it's still, they're still willing to work with me, and it's a valuable way of for me to get funding. PayPal.com/PayPalMe/Douglas V. Gibbs. So it's PayPal.com, PayPal.com/PayPalMe, PayPalMe slash Douglas V. Gibbs. PayPal.com slash PayPal.me/Douglas V. Gibbs. Or if you use Venmo, I put up a donation graphic every once in a while on the website at the blog. There's a Venmo QR code you can use, or you can send it to Douglas Gibbs 3. That's Douglas, but with a hyphen between Douglas and Gibbs and a hyphen between Gibbs and 3. So it's Douglas hyphen Gibbs hyphen 3. Douglas Gibbs 3 with hyphens between Douglas and Gibbs and Gibbs and 3. Douglas hyphen Gibbs hyphen 3. And then when it asks you for the four digits, 3975. Punch in 3975 when it asks you for the four digits. Or if you use Zelle, send me money, DouglasVGibbs@yahoo.com. DouglasVGibbs@yahoo.com. That email address is only for Zelle. I do not answer emails at that address. So if you want to send me an email and you send it to DouglasVGibbs@yahoo.com, DouglasVGibbs@yahoo.com, you will not get an email answer. However, you can use that for Zelle. And that's actually the way I prefer it. It's quick, it's inexpensive. Let's get to our list of things we want to talk about. So first of all, we have a Biden administration says they will hunt down the January 6th accomplices. If even if you weren't there, if you had anything to do with January 6th, it'll be hunted down. Now, we've talked about January 6th a number of times on this program. It wasn't an insurrection. It wasn't a riot. The people that heard President Trump speak on that day hadn't even arrived yet at the scene when the worst of it was going on. These were people that were there ahead of time. Were there a handful of patriots in there? Yes. But mostly it was people, there was plants, it was FBI, it was Antifa, it was Black Lives Matter. And remember, and I've talked about it on this program also, way back in 2019, I wrote an article about a poster that Antifa had out. And on this poster, it basically said, hey, you know, Antifa comrades, dress up as patriots, put on MAGA hats and put on 3%er logos and fly a flag and look like you're MAGA so that when you protest, it confuses everybody as to who you are. It makes sure that the MAGA people gets the blame, not us. And so what they did on January 6th was something they had done before and something they were planning on doing on a larger scale, Antifa anyway, and the FBI or whoever it was that staged that false flag on January 6, 2021, they were behind it. They had planned it. They used Antifa's plans, their ideas. And so now you've got a federal government who has decided anybody who has been involved in that must be hunted down. Now they will tell you it was, well, you know, Doug, I mean, gosh, you know, insurrection. Can't allow for such a thing. And my response is, no, it wasn't insurrection. It's not what it was. That's not the way it should be treated. Insurrection, if let's put it this way, and I've said this before, if it was in fact insurrection, and by conservatives who believe in the Second Amendment, why wasn't there a single gun on the scene? Why wasn't anything more than a handful of windows broken? If it truly was an attempt to overthrow the government or to overturn an election, you don't think that a bunch of conservatives who believe in the Second Amendment would have, I don't know, done more damage? It was a protest. It was a false flag. The protesters from the MAGA rally, when they showed up, were confused. They didn't know what had gone on. They just started following the flow. That's the reason why a lot of the footage shows patriots just walking through the Capitol in between the velvet ropes, like it's a tour. All right, so let's go on to the next one. The money for Ukraine that we're sending, all that money to Ukraine, where is that money going? Do we even know? Do we even know where those dollars are going? A few weeks ago, Ron DeSantis called for the end of U.S. support for Ukraine, and CNN host Caitlin Collins asked, does that mean end U.S. support for Ukraine completely? Does it mean stop sending money? Well, why would you do such a thing? Where is that money going? DeSantis criticized President Biden's handling of Afghanistan and what some see as a U.S. overextension since the Cold War there in the Ukraine. And so Ms. Collins asked him to clarify if he meant the U.S. should stop sending weapons and money. Now, DeSantis' response was, I think Europe should supply the weapons. And then he pivoted to China and then the border. We don't have the money to be sending over there, first of all. We are already in debt. Second of all, once again, I ask the question, where is that money going? Where is that? How many hands what politicians are pocketing money. Zelensky is pocketing money. Other countries involved there are pocketing the money. You know, is there an Iranian connection? Is there a Chinese connection? Is there a European connection where European politicians and manufacturers are just pocketing the money? How many dollars out of every $100 actually goes to help families or to help fund that war? $2? $3? We are sitting here, and you've got, you know, this ongoing war. And you know, it's funny because during the Trump administration, not a single new war was started. He finished a few, but Trump didn't start any new war. He's the only president in my lifetime not to increase or start war. Meanwhile, you've got, and this was a headline just, about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, UK pledges £2.5 billion for Ukraine before signing historic security agreement. The long-term agreement would formalize existing aid and commit the UK to support Ukraine if the East European country is ever invaded by Russia again. Now, again, I don't think it's good when a country gets invaded. It's not good that Russia attacked Ukraine. But then again, is Ukraine the innocent little country that we're being told? I mean, remember, Burisma, you know, the Clinton connection, the Biden connection, Hunter Biden, and all of that. Ukraine's government, Ukraine's infrastructure is probably one of the most, if not the most, corrupt in the world. And whether or not Russia had a legitimate gripe when they attacked them, here's my question. And this goes back to George Washington. George Washington talked about getting involved in foreign entanglements. While he believed in peace through strength, Washington said the best way to keep the peace is to be prepared for war. He also warned against getting involved in different scenarios out there that don't have anything to do with us directly. If it does not directly affect us, we don't need to be involved. This is a 1,000-year, 2,000-year, however long it is, gripe between the Ukraine region and Russia. There has been battles and fights there since day one. If you want to get biblical, we can even get into Magog and Gog and all that jazz. This is a region that has a history of battling, and we're going to throw money at it to corrupt actors who probably won't use it for anything other than... Really, do you think the Ukraine government with Zelensky and the corruption that's in there, they're just, oh, thanks for all that money, we're going to put all of it into the effort? No. How many of it is being pocketed? How many of those dollars, pounds, whatever, all those funds that are going there from different governments, how much of it do you think is actually going into the effort? How much is actually being provided to provide for sustained assistance for their defense? How much is it going to help with these different security agreements between Ukraine and NATO and the United States and Britain and so on and so forth? How much of it? And there's a lot of money being poured into it. I think it's a money laundering operation. I think the money that's going in from the federal government, some of it's coming right back and into the pockets of certain players, actors in the United States government, along with actors and players in the European governments, Ukrainian government, and maybe others. That's what I think. We need to be out of that war. We need to stop sending funding to that war. All we're doing is holding up corruption and putting money into the pockets of bad people. All right, now, with all of this that's been going on against Donald Trump, when the... with these different lawsuits and all this stuff, Trump said something that and has been claiming something that a lot of people are questioning. And they asked me what the, constitutionally, is he right? And so what Trump has said is he has presidential immunity. In other words, you cannot go after a president criminally after he was president the way the Democrats are doing against him right now. You cannot just suddenly attack a president for the job he tried to do as president. And as Trump said, and he's right, if you've got a president worried about whether or not he'll be criminally charged, attacked after his presidency, he can't perform his job. So there's an immunity for the president. Well, the answer lies in Article 1, Section 3 of the United States Constitution. Interestingly enough, the section that today's lesson is about, but we're at the a different part of that section, but I'll read, first of all, what pertains to this idea of presidential immunity so that we understand the details. What does the Constitution say? Now, understand this is just a strict reading. I'm not going to get into original intent, the debates, and the arguments. That would take a two-hour show. I'm just going to give you the basic here. So here's what it says, very last paragraph of Article 1, Section 3 of the United States Constitution, and this ties into presidential immunity. And it also has a little bit to do with impeachment. It actually ties into it, and here you'll understand once we get there. Judgment in cases of impeachment shall not extend further than to removal from office and disqualification to hold and enjoy any office of honor, so a trust or profit under the United States. So in other words, if you are impeached, the worst penalty can be removal from office and the inability to run for office again, because it's a political trial. It is a trial by the government against a politician, an office holder. It is not a criminal trial. So conviction of impeachment doesn't result in, you know, someone being let out of the room in handcuffs and an orange jumpsuit. The worst that happens out of it is removal from office and inability to run again. So that's the purpose of the impeachment. Now, then it goes on. You'll see, most people that I deal with in my life, oh, so you're saying you can't be criminally gone after? Well, I didn't say that. Hang on. Hang in there. We'll get there. So after that, what it says is, but the party convicted shall nevertheless be liable and subject to indictment, trial, judgment, and punishment according to law. So in other words, after removal from office, then the president is open to be criminally charged. But notice what it says, but the person convicted. In other words, in order to be charged criminally as a president of the United States, you must have been found guilty, convicted of those same crimes through an impeachment hearing first. If you weren't impeached and removed from office regarding it, they cannot go after you criminally. So there is a certain level of immunity, because if they didn't catch you in the act, impeach you for it, and the Senate convict you, then that's it. Now, the good news is that means that everything that they're doing to Trump right now, insurrection and overturn election, all that garbage, is unconstitutional. They're violating the language we just read. The bad news is if you don't catch Biden in the act as president doing the things that he's been doing, the treason and the bribery and all that, technically, according to this in the Constitution, once he's out of office, he's done. You can't go after him unless you got him with an impeachment first. You got to impeach him and convict him of those things in order to criminally go after him once he's removed from office. Now, the stuff that they're talking about now with the impeachment against Biden is largely centers around things he did as vice president and as senator, and that's different. And if there's bribery, if there's treason, there is no statute of limitations on those things. Go after him. If he was committing treason, if he was being accepting bribes while vice president and while senator, that's something wholly different. Those positions are different than being president. All right, so now got to go on to the next thing. But hopefully you understand that. So when Trump says, you know, he's got presidential immunity, he's right. He is accurate. And what they're doing, going after him the way they are, it's all unconstitutional. All right, next topic on the table, Supreme Court of the United States. This is, a week ago? They ruled that Texas, putting up their razor wire, that the federal government did have the authority to take it down. So the federal courts defended the federal government in a federal case. What a surprise. I do know that this particular Supreme Court is better than we've had in the past, but nonetheless, Amy Coney Barrett basically jumped lines, went to the other side, hung out with Darth Vader and his friends over there over at the dark side of the Supreme Court. And basically what they said was that that immigration, border security is a federal issue, and by putting up the razor wire, Texas is interfering with the federal government's ability to process the migrants. All right, well, first of all, they're not supposed to be processed. They're supposed to be rejected. If they want to be processed, they can go to where there's a legal entry point to go through the process. So first of all, that's a bad argument. Number two, is border security solely a federal issue, or is there some concurrent power somewhere when it comes to the state? All right, so one of the ways I like to explain it to help people understand it is I use a school ground. So the word concurrent, when it comes to power means that both parties have authority. And immigration and border security, in a sense, is a concurrent issue. On a school ground, both the principal and a teacher has a concurrent authority to issue detentions. But the circumstances behind those powers, the ability to issue detention, differ. In other words, the teacher's power to issue detention is based on what happens in the schoolyard or inside the classroom. And the principal's ability to issue detention is tied to the schoolyard and, you know, in a general sense. So while the teacher does have some authority in the schoolyard, their primary authority is within their classroom. Now, let's say a kid comes on the campus. Now, let's go beyond detention. Let's talk about a little bit more of this, these issues concurrent and all sort of stuff. So let's say some kid from some other school that's not supposed to be on campus enters campus. They're on the campus and they're not supposed to be there. They cut through the fence. They enter the schoolyard. They're walking around. The principal, like the federal government, has his agencies that work for him. In his case, security guards, the security detail or whatever it is, administrators and so on and so forth. They all work for the principal, and so they do things on behalf of the principal, and the principal says, puts out the word, hey, we've got these persons that are on campus, they're not supposed to be here, so we need to deploy our agencies to get that person off campus. So security finds a kid that's on campus and not supposed to be there, brings him into the office to process him, find out who he is, and then they remove him from campus. And then they watch for him to make sure he doesn't come back on campus. They fix the hole in the fence, and they remove him. They deported him from the campus. But what if that kid gets past security or is able to evade security and winds up in one of the classrooms? Is that teacher completely defenseless? Are they not allowed to remove that child from their classroom? Are they not allowed to take action as a teacher in their classroom to protect the students in the class? Well, absolutely not. The teacher has that authority. So if the teacher needs to detain that child, turn that child over to the security that's under the principal, then the teacher can do that. Now, the teacher doesn't necessarily have the authority to remove the child from the campus. That's the job of the principal. And the principal still needs to do the paperwork. The school district wants, you know, an incident report and you know, could they identify the person, all that jazz. And if worse comes to worse, you know, I guess, you know, there'll be other policing agencies get involved, but for the purpose of this particular analogy, we'll stick with what we got here. So you've got a teacher who can protect their classroom. And if they want to lock the door and put up obstacles to keep the child from entering the classroom, the teacher has every right to do that. The principal's job is to remove the child from the campus, and if the child that is on campus, not supposed to be there, gets inside a classroom, to assist the teacher in removing that child from the classroom and ultimately to remove that child from the campus. What happens if you got a principal that refuses to do his job? Let anybody come on the campus. They can play in the recess with the kids. Let the homeless, you know, put up a few tents while they're at it. Well, then we got a problem. So the principal, first of all, is violating the rules. But you can't stop them from violating the rules. All right, hey, this is my school. I'm going to run the school the way I want. Well, then you got to remove them from office. You got to replace them with a principal who's willing to do the job. So that's the way it is here with Texas. Texas has every authority to put up razor wire or do whatever it needs to do to lock its door to keep people who are not supposed to be in their state out of their state. And just because the federal government refuses to do their job doesn't mean that the state has to put up with this illegal action. Now, the court comes in and says, oh, well, the principal cannot do their job. It's okay because it's their job. And since it's their job, if they decide not to do the job, well, that's okay too because it's up to them. Baloney. That doesn't mean then that suddenly the teacher has to put up with it and say, well, all right, I guess I got to throw my door open and let all these knuckleheads into my room. No, the teacher's going to continue to lock the door. And even the principal says, hey, you can't lock your door. Forget you. I'm locking my door. I'm protecting my students. And that's what Texas has done. Forget you. We're still putting up razor wire. We're still going to deploy it. I don't care what you say. You are wrong. We have every authority to protect our state from these invaders. Article 1, Section 9, in fact, or Article 1, Section 10, should I say, actually says that a state can, if they believe they're being invaded or they're in such imminent danger, they can not only defend themselves, wage war. In other words, according to the Constitution, if the state thinks they're being invaded, if these people are coming in and they believe it's an invasion, and even if it's not an invasion yet, but the people may come in, they can wage war. In other words, they can have armed personnel there to shoot these people from and to stop them from coming into their state. But the Supreme Court says, well, you can't put up razor wire. Baloney. They could put up the razor wire, and if they want, they could put up a state militia right there armed on the border and say, you're not coming into our state. Just because the federal government's willing to violate the law and violate the Constitution doesn't mean that we have to put up with it. It is our authority to stop the invasion. So that is that. That answers hopefully the question of whether or not Texas has the authority to do the razor wire. Darn tootin'. Now, you know, I was talking to someone the other day, though, and they said, well, Doug, you know, people have died. I heard a story of a family, and they drowned in the Rio Grande because of that white razor wire. That's all that person knew. They didn't know any details of the story. They just heard, hey, you know, people have died because of the razor wire. Don't you think that they should at least take it down to save lives? All right, well, let's talk about that incident for a second. The people, the family, I think it was a mom and two girls, and, you know, 90%, 80%, whatever of these invaders are males that are, you know, military-age males. And most of them are other than Mexican. And for that matter, other than Western Hemisphere, they're from places like North Africa, the Middle East, China. And then some of them are from the Caribbean, like Haiti. And then you get some from Central America. You get your MS-13, stuff like that. But most of them are invaders. Yes, there are some people that are mixed into it that are knowing how bad it is, why anybody would allow their child to go through the rape and torture and molestation that happens. It's cartels are controlling this too, along with China and all that. But beside the point, so let's go back to that family. So the family did, they drowned in the river. Where was the razor wire? It's on the Texas side. So first of all, they didn't drown because of the razor wire. Now the argument isn't that the razor wire caused them to drown. The argument is that the razor wire prevented the Border Patrol from getting to the scene to save them while they're in the water. On the surface, that sounds like it might be valid until you consider this in that particular situation. Mexican authorities were on the scene. Mexican authorities got to the drowning victims before the Border Patrol could have, even if there was no razor wire. And they drowned anyway. So first of all, the razor wire did not prevent their drowning. Mexican authorities, which, you know, the persons weren't even on the American side yet. So it wasn't even the responsibility of Border Patrol. It was the responsibility of Mexican authorities anyway, because that's where the people came from, first of all. Second of all, so who really caused them to drown then? Who's at fault? They are. They chose to make the journey. They chose to enter the water. They chose to take the action they did, knowing it was illegal and knowing the risks, and they died in the process. They took the action. They took the risk. They are to blame. It's like the burglar, I remember years ago, I think it was like a decade ago, there was this burglar who decided they wanted to rob somebody's house, and they got up on the roof because they couldn't get in. They looked down through the skylight and somehow wound up falling through the skylight and landed on a table and injured themselves and then sued the family who owned the home for his injuries. If you wouldn't have been on the roof in the first place, you wouldn't have been injured. How can you sue them? You weren't supposed to be there in the first place. Of course, court didn't find it that way. They actually, I think, found for the burglar there, but that's beside the point. If you don't want to get into trouble, you don't put yourself into that situation. Now, my dad was telling me that as a kid. You don't want to get beat up. Don't go to the party where there's a bunch of thugs. You don't want to get a ticket for speeding. Don't put yourself in the situation where you're speeding. You don't want to find yourself dead. Don't put yourself in a situation or a place where death is a possible result. Now, sometimes in life, you got to take risks. I get it. Life is all about risks. And sometimes risk can be a good thing. You know, it's like, oh, Doug, you know, I can't go out there. There might be someone sick. You know, I'm going to wear my mask. I'm going to disinfectant all over everything. I was at, earlier this week, I was at the library because I'm working on the index of my book, the history book I'm going to have on sale in the next week or two. And sometimes the best place to go to get work done is the library. There's no distractions, no outside influences. I don't have a TV or a radio or games or anything, you know, that partake in. I don't have noises coming from beyond my door or whatever. So I like to go to the library often just to get work done because I got to get this stuff done. And so while I'm sitting there working, this young lady shows up at a table that's near mine where I'm sitting, and she breaks out the disinfectant wipes, wipes the whole thing down, the whole table down, like two or three times, make sure she got every little nook and cranny while she's wearing a mask. This is a paranoid person who's afraid of everything. If you don't want to get into trouble, you don't put yourself in the situation. At the same time, you don't take the opposite extreme and be afraid of every little, you know, pipsqueak and nudge that's out there. You gotta live your life. And sometimes risk is a part of that. But anyway, getting back to our Texas border and all that jazz. So the family who tried to cross the river, their fault. They didn't die because of the razor wire. They died because they entered the water. They didn't die because the razor wire stopped the Border Patrol from trying to save them because Mexican authorities were there to try to save them faster than the Border Patrol would have been. Everything you've been told is a lie. How do you know something's a lie? The media put it out there. The left put it out there. It's almost always a lie. Now, let's get back to President Trump and January 6th. We're talking about earlier. What is the definition of insurrection? Insurrection is an attempt to violently overthrow the government. Insurrection is to violently overthrow the government. The accusation is that January 6th was insurrection. Not just to interrupt a meeting, not just to overturn an election. It was insurrection, according to the enemy. If it was insurrection, then where was the violence? Well, Doug, didn't you see those people? They're breaking through windows. That wasn't violence. That was violence, according to them. But, you know, it's funny. Oh, we have to make it insurrection. We have to make it as bad as possible so that we can suspend habeas corpus and go after these people who dare to stand against us. That's what it is. Those people dared to have an opinion other than the people that are politically behind the persecution of these people. They are destroying lives. Okay, but get back. Okay, so the definition of insurrection. Now, here's the thing. What must happen in order to be guilty of insurrection? Because insurrection, would you not say that insurrection is a crime? It's a big crime. It's a massive crime, but nonetheless, it's still a crime. And the way the United States is designed, crime must be prosecuted. We have innocent until proven guilty. We have due process. Crime is not crime until it's been convicted. The founding fathers wanted to protect personal individual rights so much so that even if you are a criminal, you're a crook and you committed a crime, your rights take precedent until it's proven. You are innocent until it's proven. It doesn't matter if all the evidence says so. You have to have the opportunity to go through the process, due process. There must be a conviction. If there's no conviction, you are not guilty of insurrection. Insurrection does not apply if there has not been a conviction. To be charged is not enough. To be assumed is not enough. To be said by a bunch of politicians in the media that they committed insurrection is not. It does not suddenly make insurrection. Insurrection doesn't exist. It is not a thing until it has been proven in the court of law. Once it's proven in the court of law, once the person charged has been convicted of it, then it's insurrection. Tell me. How many of these January 6th people have been found guilty of insurrection? How many of them? Zero. None of them have been charged with insurrection. They've been charged with ridiculous stuff that's not even true. You know, I've got a friend, Derek Kennison, who's been on my KMET show a couple times. And he was convicted of all counts against him. He showed up at 2:45 after all the hubbub happened between 1 and like 1:45, maybe 2. He showed up at 2:45, so he's there after the meeting has adjourned, after the violence, the alleged violence had happened. He showed up on the scene at the Capitol after it all happened, shows up, shakes hands, wraps his arms around his friends, other three friends, and they're in a circle to pray for America, to pray for the situation, to pray for the person they heard was shot and killed, Ashley Babbitt, in hindsight, and that's all they did. And he's been convicted of things like disrupting an official meeting, trespassing, entering the premise, which he never did. He never stood on the concrete, never went on a step. He was on the grass the entire time. And what is their evidence that he did all these horrible things? Yeah, but Doug, I mean, he was there. Okay, he was there. So if a liquor store is being robbed and I'm one of the patrons in there, someone walks in, robs the store, takes stuff and leaves, am I guilty because I was there? No, I didn't commit the crime. I was there. Well, Doug, he was there. He was there. Well, where's the evidence that he committed any crime? Where's the evidence he did something? You know what their evidence was? A photograph of him being there. And then they used facial recognition to hunt him down. That's it. They got a photograph, so he was there. Did he participate in the quote unquote riot? No, he was there. He was there, shook hands, he prayed, and he was there after it all happened. Yet he was found guilty on all counts by a jury from a city that votes 95% Democrat, 95% registration. When they asked for a movement of the trial, nope, don't get it. The judge, according to my friend, fell asleep a number of times during the trial. Members of the jury fell asleep during the hearing. And the judge actually said at one point, anybody who was within that zone is guilty. Judge can't say that. That's a mistrial. But he was found guilty. He's waiting for a sentencing, which is in April. All because he was there. Innocent until proven guilty. No evidence proving anything other than that he was there. And if anything, the only video evidence there is of him is prayer. I've seen the video. It's for him and his three friends. These four young men are in a circle like they're in a huddle with their arms around each other's shoulders in prayer. That's the incriminating evidence. And a photograph and a video of them in prayer. Both times outside. There's no evidence of him going inside. Why? Because he never went inside. There's no evidence of him acting violently. Why? Because he never acted violently. There's no evidence of him breaking a window. Why? Because he never broke a window. There's no evidence of him stepping even on the concrete. Why? Because he never stepped on the concrete. But they decided he was guilty, regardless of his innocence. And the trial was just a formality. Insurrection is not what that was. But that's the way it's being treated. Because they need it to be insurrection. Because if it's not an insurrection, they can't do the things that they're doing. And if it's not insurrection, they can't hunt down anybody and everybody that had anything to do with it. Well, we're going to hunt down everybody that was affiliated. Anybody that had anything to do with it, even if they weren't there. Really? So it's bad enough that you're putting in prison, you're sentencing, you're charging, convicting people who are innocent, who was on the grounds and did nothing wrong. It's not enough that you're ruining their lives, destroying their lives for simply being there, but now you're also going to go after people who weren't even there, but because they knew someone was there, or they sent out a social media post, or encouraged people to be there, or they're talking about it. What type of Nazi lefty commie regime is this? And yet they call Trump the authoritarian? Who's the one that's hunting people down and destroying their lives for just being there or just talking to someone who was there or talking about people who were there? Because that's what it is. And you know what they were there doing? They were carrying out their First Amendment enumerated rights. My friend and his friends were praying freedom of religion. They were speaking out freedom of speech, podcasting freedom of the press, assembling with others freedom of assembly. And they were complaining about what was going on and saying that the election was fraudulently carried out, petitioning the government for a redress of grievances. All five First Amendment rights enumerated were in play. And the beginning of the First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law. Federal government shall take no action if the Congress shall make no law. But yet they have. And they're hunting down these people like they're criminals because they were there, or they thought about being there, or they knew someone who was there, or they talked to someone who was there. We have an authoritarian commie regime, dictatorship, and they're freaking out about Trump. Trump believes in a free market. Trump believes in pulling the federal government back. Less regulations. How is he the authoritarian? Well, Doug, he's going to go after his enemies. Isn't that what they're doing here with January 6th? They are projecting. They're saying he is guilty of what they do. And that's why in Iowa and New Hampshire, Trump won overwhelmingly. Why Nikki Haley, that globalist commie rhino, is even still in the race, I don't know. She's not even eligible. According to Vattel's Law of Nations, in order to be a natural-born citizen, you have to have citizen parents, plural. Neither one of her parents are citizens at the time of her birth. They are now, but they weren't at the time of her birth. Therefore, she's not a natural-born citizen. Oh, Doug, there you go with your birther stuff. I don't care. I know it was meant. I know what the definition of natural-born citizen is. Being born on American soil does not automatically make you a natural-born citizen. If being born on native soil was all that was needed to be president of the United States, then they would have put native-born. That is not what they put. They didn't write born citizen or native born citizen. They put natural born citizen. Why go out of their way to use language that goes beyond born citizen? Because it is something that is beyond just simply being a born citizen. A natural born citizen is someone who doesn't have foreign allegiances, foreign ideas, because both parents were citizens at the time of their birth, and they were raised in a household in which only American values were being taught, or at least that was the hope. That was the idea. That was the reason behind creating natural born citizen the way they did. Ties to natural born subject, ties to natural born citizen, all the way back to Greece. We've got support of Attila's Law of Nations, we've got support of English Common Law, we've got support of Greek Law, we got support of the Immigration Naturalization Act of 1790, and five times Chief Justice of the United States Supreme Court has used the proper definition of natural born citizen, and yet they're telling me I don't know what I'm talking about. I got more than enough evidence. Certainly got more evidence supporting my definition of natural born citizen than the federal government has against my friend Derek Kennison. They've got a photograph that he was there. I've got legal precedent going all the way back to Greece on what natural born citizen is. But I'm wrong, they're right. Why? Because they hold the guns and they hold the gold. They got the guns, they got the gold, so therefore, or as Biden has said, well, we got F-35s, go against F-35s. Really, jerk? Your attitude is if we dare go against the government, you're going to use F-35s on American citizens? Is that what you're saying? Are you saying that people who stand against you, you will kill with F-35s? And you will hunt them down if they even associate with anybody that showed up on January 6th? But yet you're not the authoritarian? All right, next topic. Iowa, New Hampshire, once again, I mentioned that a second ago, and it went swimmingly for Trump because he's very popular. I think Trump is the most popular president in the history of this country since George Washington, dare I say. And they're trying to do everything they can to stop him, and the more they try to stop him, the more popular he gets. The more they try to stand in the way of Trump, once again, returning to the Oval Office, the more they try to stop that, the more popular he gets. Because he's got street cred now. He is just like the people who feel, I guess, victimized by the government. I hate the word victim, but that's what we're going to say here. Because he has been. He's been attacked for no reason other than telling the truth. Of course he's popular. Here's the thing. Can he overcome the cheat? Because we know they're going to throw everything they can at stopping him from becoming president. Is his popularity so huge? Is his popularity so massive that it will overcome everything they throw at him? All of the fraud, all of the irregularities, all the anomalies, all of the algorithms, all of that. Is it enough? Now, here's the thing. I don't know the answer to that question, but I do know this. If Trump wins, I don't want to be near any of the population centers. If Trump wins, the cities will be on fire. They'll be rioting across the country because that's what leftists, commies do. It's Weather Underground on steroids. It's the Bolshevik Revolution and the black shirts and the brown shirts on steroids. But if Biden or whoever they got running wins, despite the fact that he's the most popular candidate for president and the most popular president since George Washington, and maybe Jefferson, but Jefferson barely got in office, even though he was very popular because of the games they were playing. Even though he's the most popular since the beginning of our country, yet they pull off the win, then they will feel indestructible. They can't be beaten. They were even able to overcome the great Trump. And if they believe that their cheat, that their what they do could even overcome the great Trump in 2024, in 2025, they will not hold back. Because who can stop them? If you feel invincible, you become even more tyrannical if you're a tyrant. And you do everything you want and anything you want. Because you can. Because they can't stop you. You've proven that you overcame the great Trump. You've proven that despite the fact that he had the popularity that was off the scale, you were able to overcome it and shut those people up and get your guy in. So who's to stop you from doing anything else? If you're familiar with the French Revolution, there was something called the Reign of Terror, where they went door to door and beheaded people who dared to stand against the secular leftist revolutionaries. And as a result, 250 people or so were beheaded, and everybody else shut up because they didn't want to lose their head. And once you instill that kind of fear, you've got them. Either Trump goes in office and people die because of the rioting, or Biden goes in office and people die because there's no stopping them, and they don't care. They're willing to violate every law that's on the books with January 6th. They're willing to destroy lives to get what they want on that. Why would they stop there? Why would they not commit a reign of terror? And understand that the enemy has infiltrated the Republican Party as well. We know this because of this. The Daily Mail put out there a piece of audio that basically has the Arizona GOP leader bribing Kerry Lake, saying, hey, you know, stay out of politics for 2 years. We, you know, there's people in Washington, there's people back east that will blow my car up if I don't convince you to stay out of the race. This is a Republican, the head of the Republican Party in Arizona, offering a bribe to Kerry Lake. And she's, you know, like, well, how much would it take? You know, she's not that she's entertaining it, but she's, you know, basically, you know, trying to find out how far these people are willing to go. Now, the name of the Arizona Republican Party chair, Jeff DeWitt, is the person. He's at the center of this controversy, this leaked audio that he attempted to bribe Kerry Lake into backing down. Don't run for Senate. Don't be a problem. Don't get involved. You know, you're, you know, basically, well, he didn't say this literally, but you're a danger to the powers that be, and they're threatening me, so I got to get you to I've got threats from powerful people that will take me down if I can't convince you not to run. And so he now has resigned from his position, citing an ultimatum from Lake's team, which is threatening to release more audio of the private conversations. And then he's responding, oh, I can't believe that she's, you know, releasing this. You know, how horrible this is. Shows the type of person she is. Wait a second. You're the one that bribed her. You're the one that said something. And the DeWitt is saying, well, you know, it was selectively edited. How do you selectively edit out, you know, you can't edit something to say, you know, hey, how much money will it take to get you to back down? That's not based on editing. You said it, Jeff DeWitt. You're the one that offered the bribe. You're the one that told her, back down. I've got powerful people who are threatening me. And if you don't back down, I got a problem here. The throughout the audio recording, DeWitt made it abundantly clear that he has a problem here. He's got to stop her. And his statement, now that he's resigning, is a crack-up because he's still kind of feigning innocence. Well, I am truly unsure of its contents, meaning the audio that was recorded. But considering our numerous past open conversations as friends, I have decided not to take the risk. As Lake requested, in the hope that she will honor her commitment to cease her attacks. Cease her attacks? You bribed her. Or you're trying to bribe her. You are dirt. You are corrupt. You were willing to play this game because there's powerful people on the left and the establishment. And, you know, it's funny because I've been talking about the Republican establishment, which is the bad guys, the rhinos, whatever you want to call them, in the party, in the GOP as a problem. And I remember way back when I first started with radio and I had a friend of mine who went by the moniker Jasmine. He says, oh, Doug, yeah, establishment, come on, you're being ridiculous. There is, way back then, I was talking about the deep state. I was talking about that internal rot that is not only completely in control of the Democratic Party, but largely in control of the GOP, the Republican Party. And this is the kind of junk I'm talking about. You've got a leader of the Arizona Republican Party because he's afraid of the powers that be, both sides, left, I don't know, but he's afraid of them. They are threatening him, and he's going to Kerry Lake and saying, hey, we need you to step down. You're a threat to them because you're too conservative. You're too constitutional. You're too close to Donald J. Trump, which they see, you know, and the Trump derangement syndrome. I don't know if you've ever talked to someone who has this Trump deranged syndrome deal going on. I mean, they get out of their mind, screaming out of their mind, arguing against this guy, and they say, well, why do you hate them? Well, he's a racist. He's a this. He's a that. They'll come up with all these generalities, but they've got nothing specific. They've got nothing specific on the man. You know why? Because they're just afraid of him. They're afraid of what he represents. He represents liberty. He represents the Constitution. And his presidency was the exact opposite of what they accuse him of. The opposite of authoritarianism. And then you got people who are saying, hey, the election was stolen and you're now a conspiracy theorist and you're a insurrectionist and all this other stuff. People show up at a rally and show up at the Capitol saying, hey, this is a bunch of baloney, and suddenly they're being charged with insurrection and thrown in federal prison. Why? Because they showed up and because there was Black Lives Matter and FBI and Antifa on the ground causing violence, wearing MAGA hats. So now the MAGA supporters, the Trump supporters, are being accused of being a bunch of insurrectionists when they weren't. None of the people that heard Trump had even arrived at the Capitol when that happened. And now we've got DeWitt saying, this leader of this Arizona Republican Party, saying to Carrie Lake, you know, you're a danger because you're too close to Trump, you're too constitutional, you're too liberty, and there are powers back east that I'm afraid I'll turn on my car and it'll explode if I, they're going to, and the audio begins with Lake stating, they're going to try to have me murdered. DeWitt responds by mentioning news about the cartel operating in 50 states. And he explains that powerful people do not want Lake to run because, you know, she's a danger. And so he's trying to, you know, be helpful here. You know, I'm just trying to help you out here, you know. And it's not about control. It's about being on a team. They want you to be on their team. But if they're pushing a globalist agenda, she says, I can't do that. So what do they want? What do they want me to do? And DeWitt responds, very powerful people who want to keep you out back east are willing to put their money where their mouth is in a big way, essentially, basically implying a bribe there. And then Lake responds by pointing out that this effort by these powerful people is really about defeating Trump, which she said is bad for the country to them. And DeWitt continued to pitch the request from these nameless, faceless individuals, stating that Lake can't scratch their back. They're going to kill him if he doesn't stop her, he said in the audio. Either they come around and try to, either you come around and work with me, or we have a problem. This is bribery. This is a problem. And it's not about money. It's about our country. And it's disturbing. That is what's going on. That is what happened. Carrie Lake was bribed, or, well, the bribe was offered, and now there's video, and now they're backpedaling, and this is a Republican officer. This is a guy who's in charge of the Republican Party in Arizona. This is going on in our country, and it's not just the Democrats. It's not just the quote-unquote left. It is people in the GOP, and Carrie said the wonderful thing, I'm not motivated by money. She's in it for the country. All right, so I ran out of time here. I don't have time to get into our Constitution lesson or history lesson. We'll have to save that for another time. But hopefully you learned something during this episode. We did get into some constitutional stuff once again. I appreciate the time you spent with me. Remember, this show is funded by you. DouglasVGibbs.com. Go to the where it says join. Click that. Become a patron. $9 a month, or you can donate, and I'll put a graphic on there for you. Thanks for spending the time. United we stand, combined we kick butt. God bless America, my friends. God bless you. We'll see you next time.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.